Welcome to another episode of Hurdle. Emily Abadi here. Big week for the podcast. Hurdle's been featured on Runner's World's list of top podcasts to listen to while you work out, which is kind of crazy because if you've listened to episode one, and if you haven't, I encourage you to do so, this podcaster used to barely be able to run a mile, and now I'm currently training for my 7th marathon, New York City, November 4th. So yeah, huge thanks to Runner's World for the honor. Quick shout out to the sponsor of today's episode, Good American. Co-founded by Khloe Kardashian and Emma Greed in 2016, the brand's just released an activewear line that comes in sizes extra small to 4X. Head on over to goodamerican.com/Emily and use the code EMILYGA. Again, that's EMILYGA for 20% off plus free shipping over $100 through October 31st of this year. Today's guest is Nicole Winhofer. Nicole's a celebrity trainer extraordinaire, well known for working with the one and only Madonna. She calls herself a global fitness artist and created her signature NW Method classes using her background in dance. In this episode, Winhofer talks about her hurdle moment dancing in Wicked on Broadway and realizing that she truly wasn't happy in her life or in her body and needed to make a change. Let me tell you, Nicole is like a pint-sized burst of energy. She was so fun to sit down with when she was in town for Propel's collabs last month. And when she walked outside of the studio after recording, we were greeted by this bus of cute kids. So naturally, she decided that she should immediately start dancing until every single kid on the bus watching her dance in Midtown Manhattan started smiling. Another exciting thing to share, we have a date for the next Hurdle Live. It's going to be October 3rd back at the Arlo Hotel. More deets to come soon, but make sure to stay in the loop with all things Hurdle by signing up for the newsletter at hurdle.us. There, you will be greeted by a pop-up that'll ask you for your info. Also, connect with the podcast on social at Hurdle Podcast, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and do me a huge favor. Take a screen grab of the podcast and upload it to your Instagram story the next time you're listening, aka right now. Tag me, tag the pod, I'll repost it from the Hurdle account. Thanks to all of you who have been rating and reviewing Hurdle in the iTunes store. And if you haven't, please take a second to do that. And last but not least, email me. I've been so blown away lately by all of the stories that come in. These listener emails are my why, and I can't stress that enough. A listener named Kate emailed me at the beginning of the week saying, and I'll read this one. She says, "So I just wanted to say thanks for all of you do and put that out there. I listen to your podcast now when I do my long runs and even on the days when my legs don't want to move anymore. Your interviews keep me going. Please also make more. I'm about to catch up and I don't know what I'll listen to. Also, I told my friend about you and we're both like total fangirls now. Thanks, Kate. You're the best. I promise you, if you email me, I will email you back. That's how it works. Emily@hurdle.us. And that's it. Let's get to hurdling, team. I'm sitting here today with Nicole Winhofer. First and foremost, before we really get into it, I've got to disclaim, this voice is in rough shape. So hurdlers, thank you for sticking with me. I appreciate it. Here with Nicole Winhofer, she is trainer to the stars. She has worked with some awesome celebrities, including Stella McCartney, Jennifer Connelly, and probably the biggest of them all, Madonna. I'm so happy to have you here today.
Thank you for having me. And I think your voice is the sexiest thing I ever heard in my life.
I hope everyone feels that way. When we were chatting on the phone before sitting down today, you told me that one of the goals in your classes is to help your clients stop the thinking brain, from thinking and move closer to their own physical truth. And you described a class of yours like, and I quote, an underground late 80s banging nightclub with loud music, everyone's sweaty, there's lights, dancing, you're infinite, a cooler, modern version of a Tony Robbins seminar. I loved that. Nicole, why don't you tell me a little bit about your classes?
Absolutely. The classes are the most effective way to balance your energy, get your muscles working in a new way. I counteract habitual movement patterns that we do in everyday life. we're always moving forward, repeating running, cycling. It's all repetition of movement in one way. And I like to challenge the body in new ways, get people to think outside of what they're used to about breaking old habits.
Breaking old habits. I like that. And I would say, from someone who hasn't had the opportunity to take your class yet, that if you like dance-based classes, you would enjoy your class. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right.
I was a professional dancer growing up, and I think inside every human body is a little dancer that just wants to come out and play. And so I totally encourage movement and freedom of expression.
Let's talk a little bit about your background in dance. I know you grew up in the Bronx.
Yes.
So talk to me about what that was like.
Well, that was my New York experience. It was my J-Lo experience. You know, I'm proud to say that I grew up in the Bronx. That's where my dad was raised. He's of German descent, but born in the Bronx. And my mom came over to America from the Philippines when she was 16. So growing up in the Bronx, I was exposed to the streets, multicultural looking people, although I always felt confused about what I looked like because no one really looked like me. You were either one race, not a mixture of multiple races. So I found dance to be really soothing for me and allowing me to express myself freely when there was no right or wrong. And the Bronx was also the start of commerce in arts, in music. Music was huge back then. My dad is a big music buff. And I just felt like it was a really lucky time for me to arrive and experience life.
So you grew up dancing?
Yes.
And then you told me that you became a professional dancer. So you went down and started to get after it on Broadway.
Yes. So I was lucky enough to book up my first Broadway show at 16, my senior year of high school. And I wanted to be an artist and I wanted to make lots of money and, most importantly, prove to my parents as a rebellious teenager that I will be successful not going to college or being a doctor. And so I kind of gave myself no choice but to make it happen. And luckily enough, I made it happen. So I did 42nd Street, which is a tap show.
That was your first one?
Yes.
Okay.
And it was really fun. And also I was like, wow, I'm making money and dancing. And I get to go out and drink. But it definitely, you know, was my first experience in the real world at 16. And
I can't even imagine. Like, I went to college in Connecticut, but I wanted to go to Boston University, and Boston is so much lesser than New York. And I think about what that experience, that age, even at 18, how I would have handled living in a city versus what I ended up doing in Connecticut. Like, I had a hard time adjusting at 22 when I moved into New York.
Yeah, I mean, the adjustment period, I think for me, and being a dancer, it kind of teaches you your feelings and how you feel and in your body. So I knew that that freedom that I did find was like really, really big. But what I felt the most scared about was, what am I going to do after that? Kind of the thinking ahead. Okay, I booked my first show. Now what? And then I like, the fear can set in if you're not really trusting where you are in the moment and knowing that the universe will bring to you, if you're open to it, the possibility of new experiences that you might not even imagine.
So what happened after 42nd Street?
I auditioned for Bombay Dreams, which was an Andrew Lloyd Webber, A.R. Rahman Bollywood show on Broadway. And I booked that show. So it was my first actual Broadway show. So I moved back to the city and I understudied some of the leads. I got to learn the Bollywood culture. I got to work with A.R. Rahman and Andrew Lloyd Webber, pardon me. And I tried to go back to college. So a huge thing in my family was, what's your backup plan? What's your backup plan? So I went to Fordham Lincoln Center, also full time, and lived in the dorms at 18 while doing a Broadway show with two roommates with a bunk bed. And I was like the anal, like, responsible person. And I'd be like, stop, you're making too much noise. I can't concentrate. And it was tough, but it taught me a lot, the city and trying to go back to school. And it was a great experience.
So you did the Broadway show?
Yes.
And then what?
And then I did another show, Wicked, and it was the best experience of my entire life because the choreographer, Wayne Cilento, and the Tony winning director, Joe Mantello, brought in this whole new world that was kind of like not Broadway. And I also like never really studied acting. And Joe Mantello is one of the best of the best of the best in the field. And I would just go to the principal rehearsals and just hear him talk and to the actors and how he was actually teaching us about life and not really just acting, but these are life experiences.
Don't you feel like that you have those great opportunities and when you're teaching? That it's not just about the workout. It's so much bigger than that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like, I mean, that's why my voice is like this. I was teaching spin this morning, and sometimes you just realize that you're really hitting home with people, and it's like you want to speak with them. And it's obviously in that moment, maybe not a two-way conversation, but you just know.
Yeah.
Like, you know how special that time together and what you have the opportunity to help them do both in your class.
Yeah.
And out of it. It's so great.
Absolutely.
It's so great. Okay, so Wicked, that's outstanding. It's definitely one of my favorite Broadway shows. You do Wicked, and then ...
And then I was selected to go to Michael Howard Conservatory, which is allowing actors to study body workshops to help their skills. So I learned Alexander technique, Feldenkrais, lucid body, chakra work. And then I use, again, the voice. We're talking about the voice, a new way to communicate, because being a dancer, you communicate with your body. So if I was angry, I would crumpet to you. If I was sad, I would lyrical it to you. But actors use their voice. So it was a totally new way to communicate, to express yourself.
Totally. And I think you were telling me a little bit before you walked in here about how along this kind of journey, you started to struggle a little bit with exactly what the next step was for you. I think in a lot of professions, but especially as a dancer, you're really constantly thinking, what's next? What's this pathway like?
Yes. As you tell that story, I'm like, the anxiety just sets in. I'm
oh,
like,
no.
Remembering memory. But yeah, dancer's life is like you train your body and your discipline because you love it, because you love the art. And it's also highly addicting to see how to manipulate your body through how good your feet can get, your turnout, your presence, how many pirouettes you can do, taking class. And it's a totally big community. It's an underground community of art, of dancers, of choreographers. But when you start to become a professional dancer, you start to learn the field and you start to get acquainted with money and survival and understanding, oh my God, like I'm actually doing this as a profession. So you start to think about what's the next thing. They call it in dance terms. What's the next gig? Are you working or not working? And so when I left Wicked and went to this acting school, I had no job. I was coat checking at Mr. Chow's in Tribeca. I was bartending at Cipriani's. I was a cater waiter. I was broke. But I knew that I left Wicked because I was no longer happy in myself. So I find that when I'm not happy in myself, that the more actions I take or try a different thing, it can teach me to figure out what makes me happy.
Right. So essentially, this is kind of your hurdle moment right before you went to this. It's a conservatory, you said, correct?
Yeah.
Right before you went to the conservatory, it's what's going on from here? Where am I going next? If you weren't happy on one of the biggest shows on Broadway, how were you going to keep going like that?
Yeah, it was definitely a hurdle moment. And I, in fact, I called my parents to tell them, like, which is scary, like, I'm not happy. And I, like, gained all this weight and my costumes, like, weren't exactly fitting. And my partner was, like, having problems lifting me. But it's because I wasn't being inspired. Like, my creativity wasn't being inspired. And so I got the support that I had asked for. And going to the school inspired me. I wasn't making money. I wasn't on Broadway. I wasn't doing things that were getting me recognized. But I was like, wow, I feel like a kid. I'm exploring. I'm so happy. This is fun. And I think that is something that people and I have lost sometimes, is like that creativity, what brings you joy.
And so how does one go from this conservatory to finding joy, and then along that way, finding celebrity clientele.
Yeah. I think if I were to put it in terms for your followers on Hurdle, it was, I'm doing something, I'm really good at it, I know what I'm doing, but something's missing. Okay, what is missing? I have no idea. And then you start to try doing things differently. So going to that school was super different. So I learned things about myself that I never knew. Like, I'm actually really insecure. So like me going up to do a scene in front of people, I was like, oh my God, I hope no one sees me. I actually felt scared because I had no money. So putting myself in these new life experiences built a stronger self-trust in myself and put less emphasis on like what I was doing in the physical world and more on taking care of myself. I was reading Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now. He said in the book, there actually is no problem. Just keep saying yes to the universe. And that then I just found myself becoming a personal trainer.
Right. And I think actually I would say some of the trainers I know in the city here, especially, a lot of them have past acting and dancing on Broadway for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely translates.
Yeah. I think the performance aspect and, you know, when you're a teacher and you're in front of the class, there's definitely, you're on stage. And I like to think of it as a performance as well. And I know that in the arts, you develop a type of self-expression, a confidence, and a knowing in yourself that people actually look up to. So I definitely see the parallel.
Definitely. Okay, so you become a personal trainer. Mm-hmm. And then what happens?
And then I end up going on tour. I went on Madonna's Sticky and Sweet tour for 2 months to train her dancers.
And how did you even get that gig? I bet people are like, I would die for that gig.
Oh, I don't know if I could lose a life over anything in this world. Yeah. to be honest. But yeah, she was looking for a trainer to train her dancers. And in the dance community, my name came up. She had an audition. She chose me and I ended up going on tour with her. And then from there, I fell in love with dancing again because I hadn't danced in a while. And I was like, oh my God, I miss dancing. So then I went back to New York and then I did the MTV Music Awards with Shakira. And then I started doing commercial work as a dancer because Broadway dancing is different to commercial work. And then she asked me to be her trainer full time. So I ended up working with her full time. And it was one of the most challenging experiences of my life because I had to learn a brand new industry and become the best at it. And then I started training all of these amazing people like Stella McCartney, who's like the head fashion designer of the world, and Spike Jonze, who's a great director, and Umberto Leone, who's the creative director of Kenzo. And Jennifer Connelly, Rachel Weisz, and all of these amazing artists, I was able to get to work with them to be able to be in charge of their energy, their bodies, and learn too.
This makes me wonder, I'm super curious, doing that, did you ever feel like you had a little bit of imposter syndrome?
What's that?
So I sat down to breakfast with someone once and I told him I was about to go on a Good Morning America and lead a workout segment. I was the fitness editor at Self in the time and we had partnered up. And so I said to him, I was like, I'm a certified trainer. I do this all the time. But like, I'm like, why are these people listening to me? Like, why am I going to be on morning television? And he said, he looked at me and he said, you've got to put the imposter syndrome to the side and just believe that you're doing this because you're supposed to be doing it because you're good at what you do.
Yeah. Well, I never heard the imposter syndrome. I didn't question it. It was just, I was having dream after dream after dream after dream come true. Like I would, like even sitting with you in your studio today and you're asking me these amazing questions and I'm sharing my answers with you, I'm having like an out of body experience talking to you that, oh, you like care about what I have to say.
It's not just me.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. Regardless of whether, you know, you've worked with Madonna or if you're just walking down 34th Street right now, like everyone has a story that's worth telling. Mm. And sometimes people feel like the things that they have taken to accomplish aren't good enough. But the reality is that this is your reality and your story is so valuable no matter what you're doing. Mm. taking a quick break from today's episode to give the sponsor, Good American, a little bit of love. Let me tell you, I wore their Warrior Crop cover-up sweatshirt, which is essentially a mesh crop long sleeve sweatshirt with the words Good American across the back to run some errands the other morning. I cannot tell you the last time I had so many women stop me to compliment me on the street about something that I was wearing. If mesh isn't your thing, that's cool. They've got flattering picks for everyone in every size. Again, their collection spans from extra small to 4X. Also, they're having a sale starting Labor Day for 40% off of some great stuff. So head on over to goodamerican.com/Emily. Use the code EMILYGA for 20% off plus free shipping over $100. Now, let's get back to it. I'm back here sitting with Nicole Winhofer. I was reading something in a Forbes article, and you told Forbes once, you said, I went on two of Madonna's world tours with two mobile gyms, stopping at 90 different cities within 9 months. The goal was to create the exact same experience for her, no matter where we were. It was intense, as I needed to communicate with people that didn't speak English and operate in countries that had different products within environments that had different temperature extremes. I had to be well prepared and always, always have a backup plan. Lessons learned, prepare, be patient, arrive early. Would you say that those are three of the biggest lessons you've learned with working with these highbrow clients, these celebrity clients?
Yeah, I mean, you just gave me the chills because you're reminding me of those lessons that I often forget. It's simple, like life is simple. And sometimes when I attract abundance, then I forget to be patient, to arrive on time because there's so much going on. But yeah, those lessons were definitely important. And I was able to work with all of these great mentors that I learned from, and I'm currently seeking out new mentors. But they say when the student is ready, the teacher appears. So I definitely think that I'm in the right place at the right time, and I never take anything for granted. I work hard. I also accept myself more, and patience is something I think is going to be a life lesson for me. Because even the slower I go and the more I relax in my life, the more the universe is telling me, even more patient, even more patient, even more patient.
I totally know that. It's actually interesting. I was having a conversation with a few women, including my mentor, the other day. And the question kind of came up, do you ever get to a point where you're a mentor and you feel like you don't have mentors anymore? And I think when you have been so successful, people are like, well, who do you look to? And some people would say, like, I realize that now I'm just meant to be the mentor. But wow. The thing is I don't know if I exactly agree with that.
I'd have to, yeah. I mean, you're such a great entrepreneur too. And I think that I have to agree with you that I think I have viewed myself in an in-between space of having mentors. I have one in business and one in psychology, but I'm looking for a mentor, a female mentor that's actually in the spotlight, because I had Madonna for so long. And then now I'm mentoring others. I have mentoring people under me as well. So I feel often pulled in different directions. You know, it's different.
How do you find the time? I think that's a really popular question, actually. People say, how do you find the time to give back? Obviously, you've been given so much at this point. You had Madonna as a mentor for so long. And I think people struggle sometimes being in the act of service to others. So how do you find the time to give back to the people that look up to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think by you offering me this opportunity to speak my story is one way. So participating with people like you. I think secondly, my job is I make people feel good. So I'm lucky that I'm attracting financial abundance as well as helping people in my service to them. And lastly, I think when you ask me, how do I have the time? I've been consciously, intentionally creating time in my calendar. And the first person I give back to is me. And I never used to do that. And the more I schedule wake up time, drink water time, relaxation time, massage time, hike time, alone time, less phone time, the more people come back to me and the better I can be to give more. Whereas before, I think in my 20s, I was like, I have to do this and I have to do that and I have to do that. And I was depleting my energy, not realizing when I'm selfish with my time, I'm actually being better.
What's interesting, I think, is a lot of people, they hear what you just said and you're like, I'm scheduling time for these 8 activities, which should not be stressful activities. But I feel like that's almost sometimes the barrier to entry for some people to take me time, is they feel like it's almost kind of stressful to like figure out when it's going to happen. Mm. So what would you say to someone who feels like they just can't make the time to make it all happen?
That they're moving too fast and doing too much.
Yeah.
I think that that was a huge lesson that my mentor taught me, was integration of experiences. Like the time, like after we have this podcast talk, I'm definitely going to take 25 minutes to like integrate what I've learned from you, what I think happened in my experience here with you, and then like closing that and then going to meet my next appointment.
I think that a really good tool that I started using is in the mornings and the things I've scheduled. One of them is taking about like 5 to 10 minutes to write 3 things that made me feel fulfilled or happy down in a gratitude journal. And since doing that, I feel like it makes me realize, especially on the days where I have a hard time maybe writing down those 3 things, what could I do differently? Mm-hmm. How could I have tweaked something that it would have put me in a better place? Just a little, you know, personal reflection.
I love that.
It's special. It's really special.
We forget those simple things. Like you said, you have your gratitude journal. Like, I feel like a huge lesson for me too is I didn't appreciate the things that I had until they were gone. So I think you just reminded me to remember to write those things down in the morning, because you never know. We get so used to the way our lives are.
And sometimes people are better at like those types of rituals at night. I'm such an early bird.
Yeah.
I'm like,
what time do you wake up?
Oh, God.
You're like 3:30.
No, well, thank God it's not that extreme. By 6 every day.
Wow.
What about you?
More 7:30.
You know, and some people function better that way. For me, I also go to bed, typically speaking, like before 10.
Nice. Yeah.
So I'm getting 8 hours.
Yeah.
And I'll feel it on the days that I don't. I had been teaching for the past year a 6 a.m. class on Tuesdays.
Oh, ouch.
So I'm alarms 4:45. Subway is 5:21. So I'm out the door at 5:11
to make that train.
It's been rough. It's been rough. But it's taught me something, right?
Yeah.
Like, so you take a step back and you think about what you've learned from the experience. That has taught me diligence beyond. And it's taught me that, again, being in service of others, there were so many people that would show up to that class and feel so thankful that I was there to help them at that time. And so, you know what? You learn something. I learned to be thankful, and that being a little drowsy, it pays off. It pays
off.
But
you have so much energy. I feel like if we went out together, we would like turn up the dance floor.
Turn up the town. I told Nicole before we started this podcast that I used to teach dance. But what I didn't tell you is I used to teach hip hop, which is a little known fact about Emily. What is some of the best advice that you have been given in your career?
To not save the world.
And what do you mean by that?
I had an experience with one of my mentors who I was actually working with in business. And after that experience ended, we reconnected 3 years later. And he told me, the thing about you, Nicole, is you don't need to save the world. And I think I took it as, in my ambitious, strong, fortitude, willing attitude of I'm building a business and I have to do this now, I had to do this yesterday, in my entrepreneurial spirit, I would not take no for an answer. You will not bully me, man, in business finance field. I am going to do this. It's like, it's actually going to happen and I don't need to will it. So I think when he told me, Nicole, you don't need to save the world, it was like, trust, it's going to happen and you can relax and know it's going to happen. And the more I relaxed and slowed down and breathed, it made it so much easier. Like, my life is so easy now because things just come to me. So I think that was the best piece of advice.
It's so funny because you work your tail off and you're like, things are so easy now. But it's easy because you become accustomed to this lifestyle, to this grind, wouldn't you say? Because maybe before you started working at this capacity, you were, you know, on the other side of your comfort zone. But once you pushed your comfort zone, well, you just pushed it forward a little bit more. Like, you pushed it to the right. So it's like, all right, I just got comfortable with this level. So I've turned the dial to the right. We pushed the volume up. And now I'm cool with this volume.
That's so true.
But you weren't there before.
That's such a wise perspective. I never even thought about that.
I had David Seek on the podcast. He's the creator of a program at Equinox called Precision Running. And he said, you can do a lot of things good, but if you're so busy doing so many things good, you'll never do one thing great.
Ooh, I just got the chills. Oh, David Seek.
He's a bomb. So great career advice. We love that. You mentioned one book before. Do you have a favorite book that you like to give people?
I have three.
Ooh, I like that. I like that you come prepared.
One is The Thinking Body by Mabel Todd. It's a very famous kind of kinesiology, kinetics, anatomy book. Very simple read. One of Marilyn Monroe's favorites. The second one would be The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho.
Classic.
And the third is Unleash the Power Within by Tony Robbins. I think those three books would pretty much sum up anybody who's looking for a good, easy, inspiring read.
I love that. You're on the Tony Robbins train. I'm about it. I actually have a girlfriend right now that's at one of his seminars.
Really?
I think it's in Chicago. Who do you look up to now? Big question. Aside from, you know, Mr. Robbins himself.
Yeah.
Or maybe a little bit more loosely, like, where do you draw inspiration from?
All right, I'll answer that question first. So inspiration comes to me through art, going to museums. I was at Reagan Projects in LA. They were just showing Marilyn Minter work, one of my favorite artists. Going to the MoMA, Cindy Sherman's another favorite artist. I love psychology. Freud is a huge inspiration to me, and just the connection between mind and body. So I'll watch documentaries about him. I love fashion. My favorite right now is Virgil for Off-White. I also love Margiela. And I get my inspiration visually just from seeing pictures or seeing magazines. And also traveling is huge. Whenever I go to different countries, I pull from different cultures, like in Brazil and the favelas, and in Seoul, Korea, all of the different types of cuisine. I just pull from everywhere.
Where's your favorite place you've been lately, aside from this studio?
Emily, I must say, like, you're great. I love spending time with you, actually. I think Rio de Janeiro, Brazil.
Ooh.
Yeah, muito bom. Brazil has this energy about it. Granted, I haven't been there in 2 years, but I love the energy there. I also love Budapest. I think it's really special. And I would say those are my top two.
You said before that you like to provide your clients, when they come in for a class, the ability to stop using their thinking mind.
Yes.
What else do you want to give them when they come in to see you?
I want them to realize that they have all the answers and the power within themselves, and to stop seeking outside themselves for the answers or the solutions, that it's within them. And lastly, I want to give them the power of trusting their intuition. I think so often our rational brains talk us out of things we feel, like the mom who thinks that their child is smoking cigarettes, but she's like, oh, my child would never do that. My child would never do that. My child, like, the avoidance of what they feel. So the intuition of knowing that you know what you want, that you know what's going to happen, and to continue taking actions.
we're all constantly, you know, a work in progress, so to speak. What's something that you are consciously working on right now?
I'm working on a lot of things. One is relaxation. The more I relax, the more I know what I need. I'm working on asking for what I want and asking for what I need. I'm working on giving direction to my team and telling them what needs to happen. I'm working on slowing down. I'm working on growing my business in a way that feels comfortable to me, not just thinking what growing a business is supposed to be about. I'm working on choosing to spend my time with people that make me feel good and not just because it's been like this for years.
I love that.
It's important.
It's so important. It's so important. And it's this idea, like I said to someone the other day, I'm working on spending my time with people that feel more like a faucet and less like a drain.
I love that.
We're walking out of here like better people. Better people. We just high-fived. Okay, so that's what you're working on. What are you working on professionally? What's next for you guys? What's next for you?
Professionally, I'm working on opening my first studio, which involves many skills and leadership qualities that I guess the universe is calling upon me because I've never opened a studio before my own. I've opened different Madonna studios at Hard Candy Fitness, but taking the responsibility of that. Professionally.
Quick pause. Talk to them about what Hard Candy Fitness is.
Hard Candy Fitness was a global brand in fitness that comprised of Madonna's workouts that I created with her. And they opened up 8 global gyms in countries like Chile, in Berlin, in Sydney, Australia, in Mexico. And my role there was creative director of the program and also to train the trainers in each of these countries that also did not speak English in the method that I created with Madonna.
So now opening this new studio and obviously having taught your method for the last few years, you've actually certified a lot of people to teach what you teach. Is that correct?
Yeah. Not a lot. Actually, only... 5.
Oh, that's less than I thought.
Yeah.
Wow.
I have scaled my business. The teachers that are officially certified are spent a lot of hours watching my 10 years of videos and manuals and studying, and it's a 2-year kind of process.
Wow.
And then they're like officially a trainer. But because I have so many followers and fans around the world from the Madonna brand, there were trainers in these countries that wanted to teach. So they're not doing privates, like they're not training my private celebrity clients under me, but they are teaching the dance program by a certification, primarily like Zumba.
All right.
That does exist.
So I have 2 follow-up questions. The first one is this studio that you're opening, where is it?
It's going to be downtown in New York City.
Awesome to hear.
Yeah.
The second question, and you mentioned social media. So you've been doing this for so long now. How has your business changed since social media has become such a, you know, force?
Wow. I mean, social media has taught me that nothing stays the same and the world is in constant expansion. And also that I need support on my team to keep up with the expansion work because I'm slowing down. But it's taught me that when I started out in this business in 2009, like there was no social media. So all of the things I was doing were in a connection with Madonna, with Stella McCartney in a private room that no one really knew about, and how people would receive this information was through press, through stories in press. Now with social media, there's an ability for people to communicate more, to be in connection more with me. I'm trying to move away from technology. So personally, it's been something that my business is struggling with because it's part of my business. So
it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, because I'm stopping... I don't really use my phone. So I'm still in it. I'm still learning from it.
Do you think about just having someone else do that for you?
Yeah. I actually am thinking about hiring someone full time to help me, whose genius work is social media.
There are many of them.
Yeah.
There are many of them. You also mentioned something that I think is interesting about how things are different from being a trainer to being a trainer who opens a business. And I was having a call with the one and only Gunnar Peterson.
Gunnar!
I know you know him well. We were talking on the phone and he told me that a big misconception is people that are trainers think, all right, I'm just gonna go out on my own. But he's like, are you thinking about not only just the rent, that you're gonna need towels, that you're gonna need parking, that you're gonna need all of these things that go into sustaining having your own place? And he says, that's, you know, a big struggle for people. What would you say, looking back on that time when you were a little lost before that conservatory, is one huge piece of advice now looking back on it that you would have given yourself then?
Oh my God. To welcome the lostness. I think so often people are like, you are what you think. Don't say that you're lost, because then you will be lost. Don't say you're disorganized, because then you're going to be disorganized.
What's the saying? It's whether you think you can or you can't, you're right.
Yes. And I was lost at the time. And I think that because I welcomed it and admitted to myself that I was, then I was able to move from that. But I think so often people don't admit the truth. So I think a good piece of advice is to get really honest with yourself and admitting to yourself, like, are you happy? Is this making you happy? Do you need a change? What do you really want to do? What brings you ultimate joy? Because 99 times out of 10, it has to either do with singing, music, drawing, dancing, doing something more joyous that's like in our creative spirit. And I think that the advice I would give is like, ask yourself, are you happy? Like, are you truly happy?
I think that's a really great note to end on, actually. Nicole, thank you so much for coming to sit with me. This was amazing. Please take a moment to leave a quick review by clicking the link with the description to this episode. We all face multiple hurdles in life. I want to hear about yours. Reach out to me at emily@hurdle.us. Connect with the podcast on Instagram and Twitter @hurdlepodcast. Nicole, where do they find you? What's the deets?
I just wanted to compliment you on how amazing you are at your job. Like, this woman right here sitting next to me is so on it. I can't even begin to explain her on pointness.
You're sweet.
So you can find me, Nicole Winhofer, @NicoleWinhofer on Instagram, NicoleWinhofer.com on my website, where you can find videos and private training and classes with me.
I'm so happy we did this. I am.
Yeah, thank you.
@EmilyAbadi on Instagram. Another hurdle conquered. Catch you guys next time.